You are Locked On MLB. Your daily MLB podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello, baseball fans. Welcome to Locked On MLB, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. This is the daily podcast. We talk about all the Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully. Today's episode is being dropped on Dr. King's Day, the 18th day of January 2021, in what is certainly to be a memorable week in America. And I'm going to try to make it be a relatively predictable week here on the Locked On Podcast Network. This show is available on the free and easy-to-use Himalaya podcasting app. We're also available wherever you get your podcasts and you're staying at home. During these historic times, be sure to tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On MLB or check out some of the other great shows on the Locked On Podcast Network, including Locked On Fantasy Baseball and Locked On Yankees with Stacey Gutsoulias. You'll see why I'm bringing up Locked On Yankees a little bit later in the podcast. Hey, you can send requests to me for the Sunday request show via Twitter at Sully Baseball. This show is available on Twitter at Locked On MLB Pod, and you can follow me on Instagram at Sully Baseball Podcast. Hey, let's go through a little bit of some house cleaning here. The last week or so, I know I've been talking about this. I know Stacey Gutsoulias, my dear friend and host of the Locked On Yankees podcast, which was the show that actually introduced me to this whole Locked On Podcast Network, which is your team every day. She's obviously a rabid Yankee fan and has been screaming at the top of her lungs. You probably heard her without your podcasting device. The Yankees were being ridiculous, basically fooling around regarding the contract of DJ LeMahieu. Now, I have no love lost for the Yankees. I have made it clear I am not a Yankee fan by any stretch of the imagination. But with that being said, it would be just so stupid for the Yankees with their deep pockets to let go a guy who in two seasons has given his guts to the Yankees, has become one of the premier offensive players in the American League. I have no compunction saying that, whether you like advanced stats, traditional stats, all the sorts of has grit in his gut and all that BS, he's got it all. Absolutely has it all. And the fact that the Yankees were letting him dangle and even consider signing with other teams like the Toronto Blue Jays was an act of absolute madness. Well, as it turns out, they came to their senses, and everyone came to their senses. He probably could have gotten more money per year, but he wanted the stability. He wanted the long-term deal. And, you know, once you get to the tens of millions of dollars, you're basically talking monopoly money at that point. So he was basically saying, hey, I'd rather have the stability knowing I'm going to be here for a while rather than the big pile of money in a short-term burst. Hey, it's what he wanted. That's his prerogative as a free agent. And the Yankees came to their senses. It took them probably a couple of weeks longer than they wanted to. It probably should never have lasted into January, but in the end, it doesn't matter. In the end, none of it matters because he signed with the Yankees, and he signed with the Yankees before spring training camp and before any hard feelings could ferment. Now, I don't look at this as an improvement for the Yankees. I think this is a status quo move for the Yankees, but albeit one that is, they don't have to worry about his position right now. They don't have to worry about, are they going to have offense? They don't have to worry. There are other positions where they do have to have some concern about. Now, as we stated before, Giancarlo Stanton played in 23 games last year, was not great. He did have a very good postseason, thank you very much. Aaron Hicks did not have the season that they had thought. Again, everything with a grain of salt, with 100 fewer games than normal. But they were able to get really great production out of Luke Voit. And Aaron Judge, you know, you have to see, what is he? Is he going to get back to the MVP caliber player he was? And nobody knows what's happening with Gary Sanchez. Nobody. And I can't help but wonder, if Gary Sanchez is someone who needs a change of scenery. You know, he exploded onto the scene back in 2016 and looked like he was going to be a major role of the turning around of the Yankees. And now he's, you know, kind of sort of an afterthought. But they don't have to worry about their infield. Their infield, especially if Urshela continues to play well, and if they get some combination of, you know, the Gleyber Torres and Miguel Andujar and all these people who could be very good on the team, they don't have to worry about DJ LeMahieu and what he could do, because he's back and he's back for the long term, and it's really, really smart. I also think it would be really, really smart if the Yankees re-signed Masahiro Tanaka. I know he's on the wrong side of 30, but do you know what? They need bodies in there, and they need people who have thrived in New York and like to play in New York there. And I don't know what you're going to get out of Davey Garcia, who seems like he's a fine enough young pitcher, but you're not quite sure. Jay Happ is probably gone. James Paxton is probably gone. Jordan Montgomery wasn't very good. And the likes of who else? I mean, Loaisaka? Who else started for them last year? Clark Schmidt? Michael King? Having Tanaka as someone who you can look at, he's not going to be a superstar, but he's reliable. And to me, that's, they have to bring him back, and it's, you know, or they got to fill that role. Now, the Yankees did make another move, and it was one worth noting. Now, it wasn't a big splashy move. It sure would have been a couple of years ago, but I think it is an absolutely zero-risk move that has a absolute through-the-roof ceiling. There's no risk, and the reward is potentially gigantic, and that is the signing of Corey Kluber. Now, Kluber missed all but 7 games of the 2019 season, which probably cost the Cleveland Indians a spot in the postseason in 2019. He didn't pitch for Cleveland last year. He only pitched 1 game. Hell, he only pitched 1 inning for the Texas Rangers before shutting it down. And so here's a guy who's pitched 36 innings since the 2018 playoffs. He's pitched in 8 games since the 2018 playoffs. And he is, how old is he right now? Is he 35 yet? He is, he's going to be 35 on April 10th. So he's mid-30s, really has not pitched like a major leaguer since 2018. And, you know, the chances of someone bouncing back from that are not super high. But think about the caliber of pitcher he was in 2018. Do you like wins? I'm not a big fan of him, but he won 20 games. His ERA was 2.89. He led the league in complete games and shutouts and in innings pitched. The year before that, he led the leagues in victories, winning percentage, earned run average, complete games, shutouts, ERA plus, whip, and hits per 9 innings, and walks per 9 innings, and strikeout, the best strikeout to walk ratio, as he struck out 265 over 203 and 2/3 innings, and along the way, walked only 36. He happened to win the Cy Young Award that year. And in fact, between 2014 and 2018, he was a top 3 Cy Young Award pitcher 3 out of 4 seasons, winning it twice, winning it in 2014 and winning it in 2017. In other words, as recently as 2018, he was, if not the best pitcher in the American League, then constantly in the conversation. So, if he bounces back after 2 years of rest, if he bounces back and is even half as good as he was, then the Yankees are getting a major league pitcher. Now, he was a supreme innings eater before, as I said, leading the league with 215 innings pitched in 2018. Are you going to get an innings inner like that? I don't know. But there's absolutely no risk in signing him and saying, hey, got anything left in the tank? Show the world you got something left in the tank. Everyone has a mulligan for 2020. So basically, you're getting a guy who a few years ago was a legit ace, a difference-making ace. And the Yankees are getting him for a song and to plug right into their rotation. And quite frankly, even if everything goes wrong and he doesn't pitch or he gets hurt or he's spent, there's no risk to the team. Now, there are a bunch of other pitchers out there, John Lester, Felix Hernandez, Jake Arrieta, who a few years ago were all elite, who are floating in the woods right now. I've been urging teams to take a chance on them. I didn't necessarily want the Yankees to be the one to do that, but here we are. So the Yankees are doing smart things. It may have taken them a while to get to this point, but they're starting to do smart things, especially when you look at how Tampa Bay is dismantling. The Red Sox and the Orioles are not close to contention, and the main source of, well, aggravation in the American League East for the Yankees will be Toronto, and right now I think the Yankees are better than Toronto. Then the Yankees have to go for it with a notion of they want to do more than win the division. This is a shot to win it all. And you know what? LeMahieu and Kluber, they are solid members, and maybe someone to help fix the engine that is the Yankees get over that hill. And fixing engines, let me tell you something, that is not for the faint of heart, and it is not for those who are of the faint of wallet. I don't even know if that's an expression. I'm saying it is right now. That if you go to a chain store, they've got different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. But if you go to rockauto.com, their prices are the same for everybody and are reliably low. RockAuto.com offers the lowest prices possible, rather than changing prices based on what the market will bear, like airlines do. RockAuto.com is for everybody. It does not require membership or account login. RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brands, specifications, and prices you prefer. Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck and write "Locked On" in their "How Did You Hear About Us" box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection and reliably low prices. All the parts your car will ever need. It's rockauto.com. Hey, are we ready for some football? Who's going to go to the Super Bowl? Is it going to be the Chiefs? Is it going to be the Bills? Who knows? But you want to put a bet on it? Let me tell you something. If you want to put the bet on it, there's only one place that has you covered and one place that we trust, and that's betonline.ag. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use promo code LOCKEDON for your 50% welcome bonus. You got NFL games, basketball's coming up. Obviously, baseball is not far from behind. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Get into the action. Don't forget to use that promo code LOCKEDON and receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Bet online, your online sportsbook experts. Now, let me tell you something. Betting on the NFL playoffs doesn't have to be a guessing game if you listen to the new Locked On Bets podcast hosted by your boy Q and handicapping expert Lee Sterling. Get daily picks and quick hitting advice to make the smartest possible wagers. Subscribe to the Locked On Bets podcast brought to you by betonline.ag, wherever you get podcasts. You know, a few weeks ago I did the suffering index, and I came to the conclusion that the fan base right now that's suffering the most that has a team is Oakland, based upon the years waiting for a World Series title, based upon the number of times they've come so close to advancing in a postseason, only to drop that do-or-die game. My God, I know so many A's fans, and I just know that sense of being punched in the face over and over and over again. But there's another element to their suffering that kind of occurred to me. As some of you know, I've been working on a writing project about the 1972 postseason, a postseason that it has absolutely no limit to the fascination that I have from it. It's great stories, great symbolism. It's fabulous. It's like a Russian novel with all the different storylines and characters and emotions and the political and social and racial and economic ramifications of the 72 postseason, along with the fact that it had great baseball. But along the way, I've been reading several books, including several books about the history of the Oakland A's. And the A's won the World Series. Spoiler alert. The A's won the World Series in 1972. And 2 days later, still when you should be having the buzz of that championship flowing through your veins, Jackie Robinson died. He had appeared in the World Series just 9 days prior, giving a speech before Game 2 of the World Series. And he died. And it cast a pall on the baseball world. And I started reading more about the A's history. And another element of A's suffering sort of came to the forefront, much like a C&I drawing. You know, those when you stare at the pattern and suddenly the image comes up. And I realize there's another element of A's suffering that is adds to the tension of being an Oakland A's fan. Now, every time the A's have won the World Series in Oakland, and that's four times, in 1972, their World Series championship was overshadowed by the death of Jackie Robinson. In 1973, there was a distraction all throughout the World Series about the A's had a second baseman named Mike Andrews. And Mike Andrews, who was a personal favorite of A's manager Dick Williams, Mike Andrews had played for Dick Williams when he was the manager of the Red Sox. And in the World Series, he made two critical errors in the A's extra inning loss to the Mets in Game 2. Now, one of the errors, if they had instant replay back then, would have been wiped out because the first baseman's foot was on the bag and he was called safe. But the fact of the matter is he made two critical errors and the Mets went on to win the game. And Charlie Finley, the owner of the A's, was so disgusted by the play of Mike Andrews that he tried to have Mike Andrews sign a piece of paper saying he was injured and therefore had to be removed from the roster and replaced by Manny Trio, who was not on the roster. And he was coerced into doing it. Dick Williams thought it was a disgusting display from the owner, and it was trying to humiliate one of his players, and it created a really ugly story that the players of the A's were like, wait a minute, you mean our owner could just fire us in the middle of the World Series? What's going on here? And there was, it was such a backlash against Finley that his own players seemed to be fed up with him, and Dick Williams, the manager of the A's, was so tired of dealing with the BS from Charlie Finley that he told his players, win or lose, I'm leaving after this World Series. I'm done. I can't manage this team anymore. And that announcement was made in the aftermath of the A's World Series celebration in 1973. So instead of it being this wild celebration, it was relatively subdued. Even Yogi Berra, who was the manager of the Mets, came in to congratulate the A's for winning the World Series and looked around and said, this doesn't look like a winner's locker room. As Williams left, and there was such anger towards management. In 1974, the A's won their third straight World Series. It's the first franchise since the Yankees, since the Mickey Mantle Yankees, to win three straight World Series. But the storyline was, once again, Charlie Finley's strife with his own players and basically missing a couple of payments on Catfish Hunter's contract. And the people wondering, wait a minute, if he misses payments on this contract, then that means the contract is null and void and Catfish Hunter could become a free agent. And so Catfish Hunter was the best pitcher in the American League. American League would go on to win the Cy Young Award, pitched a key game out of the bullpen as well as a starter in the World Series against Los Angeles. And the A's won their third straight title, and all the attention was not on this team joining the ranks of the all-time greats, but on what the heck is going to happen to Catfish Hunter. In 1988, they lost the World Series to L.A., the famous Kirk Gibson home run, and Oral Hershiser dominated. But the next year, it was the A's revenge. They reacquired Ricky Henderson, and they stampeded all the way through the postseason, losing only one game to Toronto and sweeping the Giants. But nobody felt great. I was in the Bay Area at that time, and that was the year that the earthquake hit. And after, you know, just before game three of the World Series, delayed the World Series by 10 games, and there was a lot of sentiment in the Bay Area of why even continue playing this series? Just declare the A's winners and move on. And ultimately, they did play the final two games, and while game four was relatively competitive, the A's just trounced the Giants altogether. The Giants never had a lead for a single inning, and it was a clean sweep. But even the celebration was subdued because of all the destruction. It was more a tribute to those who gave up their lives and gave up their livelihoods and homes and everything. And a championship just didn't seem as important. That was their last championship. So the element of suffering that A's fans have, beyond the fact that it's been since 1989, they've had all the game fives that they've lost, all the one-game playoffs that they've lost, this, that, and the other thing. But the four times they did win, they couldn't let loose. There was always something to damper it. There was always something to make the celebration less than the wild euphoria that it should have been. Now, don't get me wrong. I know plenty of A's fans and plenty of A's fans who relish that 89 team. They wear their 89 championship shirts with glee and pride, but none of them could look me in the eye and say, yeah, but they lost the World Series the next year to Cincy. If they had won that, if they had won that World Series to Cincy, or if they had won in 92 when they lost the ALCS to Toronto, or any of the years, 2000, 2001, 2002, 2003, all those years, 06, 12, 13, 14, 18, 19, last year, all those years they made the postseason, if they had won the World Series those years, the absolute release and euphoria would have been completely unchecked. And in each one of those years, there was something to damper it. Now, as I said, Don Marquez and all my friends who are big-time A's fans, they love those titles of the 70s, and they love the 89 team. I'm not saying you don't love those teams. But the celebration itself had something to distract every time. So even when they win, that's not the top story of the day. And that is a form of suffering that is truly unique to Oakland. So go to the free and easy to use Himalaya podcasting app, or check us out in all the places you get your podcasts when you're staying at home. Please tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On MLB. Seeing the Yankees improve and the A's fans suffer, this is Locked On MLB for the 18th day of January 2021. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully.